Chris Hawkins has suggested that occasionally, in addition to talking about modern poetry, I might try to give a talk on Buddhism. So this morning I will talk about the Vimalakirti Sutra, a classic text of Mahayana Buddhism. Although it is apparently first appears in the first century AD in China, it reports to be the teaching of one of Buddha's original disciples. And Vimalakirti is unique in that he is a layman and he is a married, wealthy householder. He is famous for his teaching of non-duality. And we can see right away that his character in the sutra is basically designed to be an illustration of non-duality in the sense that all his characteristics are the reversal of the usual attributes of the Buddhist disciples. He's not a renunciant, celibate home leaver. He doesn't live a life of poverty with no fixed abode. He has a house, he has a family, he has money. And yet, he is said to understand the Dharma so thoroughly that Buddha's monastic disciples are all afraid to meet him in Dharma combat, that he will show them all up with his superior understanding of the Buddha's teaching. Now, one of the most famous stories regarding Vimalakirti says that he has fallen ill, and Buddha sends Bodhisattva Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, to call on him in his home and see how he is. And Manjushri comes to him and asks what is his illness and why is he ill. And here too, we think of the fact that Buddha often has described himself as offering medicine for the sicknesses of attachment and delusion. And that his followers, we would imagine, are therefore in some sense cured of these chronic illnesses that ordinary people are subject to. Yet here his wise disciple is ill. What kind of illness is that? Manjushri asks. And basically he says, if you're so wise, why are you unable to heal yourself? Vimalakirti responds, I am ill because all beings are ill. And I won't be healed until all beings are healed. And in this, he expresses a version of a bodhisattva ideal, Mahayana, ideal of compassion, in that we are not sitting in order to simply heal ourselves to attain our own personal insight or enlightenment, but that our condition is intimately bound up with the condition of all beings. And the bodhisattva traditionally is the one who vows not to enter nirvana until all beings have entered nirvana. We can understand this, I think, in a number of ways. It's not simply that Vimalakirti is not separate from all beings and their delusion. It's that he's, in a certain sense, willingly descending to their level or sharing their affliction as part of his compassionate life as a bodhisattva. In this, he's expressing what's called skillful means. He's not modeling the transcendence of a Buddha, in that he is in some sense free of all the normal afflictions or delusions or attachments of normal people, ordinary people. He is not the model of a monk who separates himself from the world in order to free himself from the attachments of the world. Rather, Vimalakirti teaches from the midst of the world, sharing the suffering of the world, being part of it. And I think that in these days of the pandemic, Vimalakirti's illness can take on a particular meaning for us, and that exemplifies the idea that our practice is not going to provide some kind of miraculous escape or transcendence from what everybody else is going through, but rather it's our way of participating in the suffering of the world, sharing it and recognizing it as our own. And that's not to say that we all need to get sick. It's rather to see that getting sick is part of what our life is, the way getting old is, and that these things are not horrible intrusions or interruptions in our life, although obviously in one sense they are, but in another they are exactly what life is and has always been: illness, old age, and death are inseparable from life. And that in Vimalakirti's teaching of non-duality, what he's saying is that all these things are going to have to be taken whole, that our life will always include illness and death, and that this is not a flaw in life, this is life. The other story that is always picked out about Vimalakirti is that Buddha sent all his disciples to debate with him about the nature of non-duality. And since this sutra is sort of written in the miraculous style of Indian stories, it's said that Vimalakirti's hut, where he was lying ill, miraculously expands to be able to hold all of the hundreds or thousands of Buddha's disciples who come to offer their views on non-duality and test them against his understanding. And one by one, they each present their picture of what non-duality is. And one by one, Vimalakirti shows them how, despite all their theoretical understanding, each of them still has some remnant of duality in the way they think. And finally, after all the disciples have spoken, Manjushri turns to Vimalakirti and asks him finally to preach the truth of non-duality. And Vimalakirti responds with what's described as a thunderous silence. The silence that doesn't describe the teaching, but manifests it. And I think it's described as a thunderous silence because we're not meant to be attached simply to silence as the answer. This is a silence that's not opposed to speech or sound. In the same way that in the precepts ceremony we speak of a good that's not opposed to bad. Or in our dedication we talk about wisdom beyond wisdom. That means a wisdom that's not opposed to delusion, but a wisdom that encompasses both wisdom and delusion. We can say it is the silence of just this, whatever its content is. And it's entering into that moment, that silence, that presence of the moment that is our experience of non-duality. Now that may sound like a very abstract ideal, but it can manifest in our sitting in a very simple and everyday kind of way. When we sit and watch how we almost automatically divide our sitting into good sitting and bad sitting. It's the simplest thing in the world to just watch how we do that over and over again, moment after moment. where this is the calmness I'm seeking. Oh, that is the noisy mind I'm trying to quiet down. That's the painful me I wish would settle down. That's the anxiety I wish would go away. Over and over again, we think our business is separating the good from the bad, endlessly judging this way and that way. How am I doing? Over and over and over. And the most basic way we can practice is to simply stay with what is ever happening in our sitting moment after moment, including all this judging and labeling of the good and the bad, and just see that too, as the endless coming and going of momentary experience. And it's not that we're going to somehow arrive at a place where sitting peacefully and sitting in terrible pain in our legs are indistinguishable. Yet somehow we can sit in a way where whatever arises is just whatever arises, and we are able at some level just to say yes to that. Now this, now this, now this. It's a great challenge in these times to genuinely take life whole with all the difficulty and suffering that's arising in the world today. One way or another, we're going to have to do it. But one way our practice could help us in that is simply this daily practice of saying yes to our body and mind as they manifest moment after moment in our zazen.